I'm Marty Moscowain. Welcome to Radio Times. On Tuesday, the Pennsylvania Supreme Court told election officials that undated or wrongly dated mail-in ballots must be set aside. This is a victory for the Republican National Committee and other groups aligned with the GOP that had filed a lawsuit to prevent these ballots from being counted. Our guest Lee Chapman, acting Pennsylvania Secretary of the Commonwealth, had argued that mail-in ballots without a date on the outer envelope should be counted, assuming they arrive on time. Now, Pennsylvania is one of the few states that does not allow the opening and counting of mail-in ballots until Election Day, which can delay results and feed conspiracies and disinformation about voting. Well, today on Radio Times, with Election Day just a few days away, what Pennsylvanians need to know about their vote. And Lee Chapman is our guest. Nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you so much for having me here today, Marty.
You're very welcome. Will the Wolf administration appeal this Pennsylvania Supreme Court decision?
No, we received this decision on Tuesday night, so we're currently reviewing our options and determining the next path forward. What's important for voters to know is that you must sign and date your ballot for this election. That's just 5 days away. So if voters have requested a mail-in ballot, if you have yet to return it, please make sure you're following all the instructions. Make sure that you are signing that ballot and dating that ballot. And if voters have any questions or if they are worried that they did not sign or date their ballot, they can call their county and see what they can do to remedy that, or they can call our hotline at the Department of State at 1-877-VOTES-PA.
If you have voted by mail and you think you might have not put the correct date or have an undate, did not date the outside envelope, can you go and find your ballot and take a look at it and see that it's okay?
So we really encourage, if you've already turned it in, to call your county Board of Elections office, and you can find information as to what the phone number is for your county Board of Elections on our website, which is vote.pa.gov. So call your county and they can help you from there to see what the options are to fix any errors with signing and dating.
Do you or does anyone know how many of these questioned ballots have been set aside?
No, we don't know yet. You know, it's too early to tell how many of those ballots have been already cast without dates or incorrect dates in our 67 counties. But one thing that's important is that in the majority of counties, those ballots are scanned. So if there is an issue, in the majority of situations, voters may receive an email saying that their ballot lacks a signature or a date. And if they do, they can definitely call their county and see what their options are to remedy that situation.
I mentioned that one of your arguments was that having a wrong date or no date was or is not a disqualifier. How come?
You know, one thing that's important to remember are these are legally cast ballots. So these are ballots that were received timely, you know, before the close of polls. So the deadline to return your mail-in or absentee ballot is 8 p.m. on Election Day. So these are ballots that were received timely, but a voter just forgot to put the date on or they put the incorrect date. And counties actually timestamp, so they have a determinative factor of when those ballots came in and that they were timely. So that was our argument, but the Supreme Court ruled otherwise on Tuesday. So what we're doing right now is making sure voters all across the Commonwealth know the rules. And the rules as it stands today is make sure you put that date on the ballot, double check, follow all the instructions. And if you think you made a mistake, you know, definitely call your county.
How many people do you expect to vote this year?
Hard to determine, but what I do know right now, as far as mail-in voting, we've had 1.4 million requests to vote by mail as of the deadline, which was November 1st. And we are at a return rate of 71%. So over 1.17 million voters have already returned their mail-in ballots. They've already voted in this election. When you look at the 2018 election, the last midterm election, there are about 5 million voters in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania that turned out. So there's a potential we might have at least 4 million or more voters turn out in person at their polling place on Election Day on Tuesday. It's hard to compare the 2018 midterm with the 2022 midterm because in 2018, Pennsylvania did not have universal mail-in voting like we do now. Act 77 wasn't passed until 2019. So we can't compare the mail-in ballot rates, but we had about a 5 million voter turnout in 2018.
And I mentioned this in my introduction, and you mentioned Act 77, which says that even if you mail in your vote a couple of weeks ago, it cannot literally be opened and counted until Election Day. How much does that slow the process?
So that's one of the limitations we have in Pennsylvania. It takes us to have results a little bit longer than other states because in Pennsylvania, election officials in our 67 county boards aren't able to pre-canvass, which means they're opening ballots from the outer envelope, the inner envelope, flattening them, scanning them. They can't do any of that work until 7 a.m. on election morning. And this is the same time they're running polling places, voting in person. And that's 13 hours of in-person voting that they're running. So it's almost like they're running two elections at the same time. So that's why it takes us longer to have returns. You know, states like Florida that have weeks to pre-canvass can have results on election night. For us, counties can't even start processing until 7 a.m. on election morning. They can't start releasing results until 8 p.m. on election day. So that's why we're trying to manage expectations and really assure voters that that doesn't mean anything bad is happening, doesn't mean that there's any fraud happening. Election officials are counting every single vote, and we have to let the process play out, and we don't want to rush the situation. You know, it's important for election officials to take their time to ensure that every eligible vote is counted.
I remember in 2020, of course, this was a presidential election. It took until Saturday for the race to be called for now President Biden in Pennsylvania. Do you expect a similar time frame?
It's hard to estimate because we don't know what the voter turnout is going to be. As I mentioned, we've had over 1 million return ballots so far, but, you know, voters, we'll see what the turnout is on Tuesday. And, you know, typically in midterm elections, turnout's a little bit lower than presidential. So we'll just have to wait and see.
What do you say to those people who say that our system cannot be trusted, that, I'm only going to believe the results if my candidate or if I win? What is the argument against that?
You know, it's really unfortunate that there's been so much mis and disinformation over the last few years that have really fueled, this rhetoric around elections not being safe and secure. You know, the 2020 election was the most secure election that the entire nation has ever run. And elections in Pennsylvania are safe and secure. I'm confident that all 67 counties are prepared to run a secure election in 2022. You know, we've had countless trainings with county election officials. Since over the last few years, counties have really shored up their cyber and physical security when it comes to elections. So, for instance, with cybersecurity, you know, we replaced our voting machines in 2019. So every single voting machine in Pennsylvania and all of our 67 counties now have a verified paper ballot where voters can verify that the selections they made are the ones that are being recorded. You know, we have two audits after every election. That's new this year, where after the election, we're having a post-election pre-certification risk-limiting audit, which really is the gold standard of audits. And all 67 counties are now required to perform that. And that confirmed the outcome of the election using statistics. You know, we have really worked with our federal and state partners to ensure that we've had tabletop training exercises with counties to prepare them for potential issues. So voters can feel confident that election officials are prepared for this election. And, you know, we encourage voters, if you have any questions about the voting process in Pennsylvania, please go to the Department of State. We are the trusted source of information. You know, we have social media accounts on Facebook, Twitter. We have ads out there. We're really trying to inform voters about the election process. in Pennsylvania to counter a lot of this misinformation that's out there.
Do you have enough election workers and poll workers? And are they safe? Are there threats? Do we need to worry about their safety?
So in Pennsylvania, we have 9,100 polling places throughout the Commonwealth. And to fully staff a polling place, you need about 5 poll workers. So it's a huge feat to have 45,000 individuals to serve as poll workers on Election Day. So we at the Department of State have had a recruitment effort. We've recruited over 9,000 poll workers. And this was really at a request from the counties. You know, since the COVID pandemic, a lot of older poll workers who had served for many, many years who did not feel safe serving as poll workers did not return to their jobs. So we've had to create a new pipeline, recruit new poll workers. And there's always a shortage, especially in the larger counties. But we're doing the best we can to make sure that we have a fully staffed complement on Election Day. And we're working closely with counties. You know, there have been threats to county election officials, to Department of State election officials, and we really think that's terrible. It's un-American. It's something that should not be taken place in our country. And unfortunately, it's been fueled with by the mis and disinformation. So one thing that we have done, we partnered with Department of Homeland Security, the FBI, to provide insider threat training to our counties, our 67 counties. We've also provided de-escalation training for our 67 counties. And we've informed them, you know, about what to do in some of the scenarios that, you know, they now have to be prepared for, unfortunately, you know, at the point of where we are in our country. So our goal is to provide resources for counties so they know what to do if these situations arise while people are voting.
And we have about 45 seconds left. Are drop boxes safe? Can people feel safe and secure if they're dropping their ballot in these drop boxes that they will not be harassed or monitored in some kind of untoward way?
Yes, drop boxes are safe and secure. And, you know, we are 5 days away from the election. So one thing that's important for voters to know, if you have your mail-in ballot, if you have not returned your mail-in ballot, please hand deliver it. Because we are within that week window and we want to make sure that every vote is counted. And with potential postal delays, we don't want a ballot to arrive after Election Day. So if you have your ballot in hand, please hand deliver it. You can hand deliver it at a secure drop box if your county has one. You can look up that information on our website, which is vote.pa.gov. You know, drop boxes are a secure, accessible way for voters to return their ballot. They have tamper evident seals. They have a deposit slot that's secure enough that ballots can only go in. Only county election officials have access to the lock. So it's definitely a safe
we gotta leave it
way.
We gotta leave it there. Lee Chapman, acting Pennsylvania Secretary of the Commonwealth, will be right back. I'm Marty Moscowen, and you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. Last night, President Biden gave a primetime address declaring there was no place for political violence, attacks on election workers, or voter intimidation in America. Speaking less than a week before the midterm elections and nearly 2 years after the 2020 election, he called out former President Trump.
You know, American democracy is under attack because the defeated former president of the United States refuses to accept the results of the 2020 election. He refuses to accept the will of the people. He refuses to accept the fact that he lost. He has abused his power and put the loyalty to himself before loyalty to the Constitution. And he's made a big lie, an article of faith in the MAGA Republican Party, the minority of that party.
Biden noted that there are candidates running for every level of office who won't commit to accepting the election results, calling it unprecedented, unlawful, and un-American. He reiterated something he has said in the past: you can't love your country only when you win.
This year, I hope you'll make the future of our democracy an important part of your decision to vote and how you vote. hope you'll ask a simple question of each candidate you might vote for. Will that person accept the legitimate will of the American people, of the people voting in his district or her district? Will that person accept the outcome of the election, win or lose? The answer to that question is vital. And in my opinion, it should be decisive.
For the rest of the hour today in Radio Times, can our electoral system withstand the attacks and pressures from those who wish to undermine it? And here with us in our Philadelphia studio is Al Schmidt, president and CEO of the Committee of 70. That's a government watchdog group here in Philadelphia. He's a former Philadelphia City Commissioner, the, lone Republican on that three-member city election board. And Al, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Thanks for having me back,
You're welcome.
Marty.
You're very welcome. Also joining us is Nick Corsaniti. He's national politics reporter for the New York Times. And Nick, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times as well.
Oh, thanks for having me.
You're welcome. And to our listeners, you can join us. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. And you can always call. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. Al Schmidt, I feel like we're going to relive 2020 all over again. Do you share my concerns?
I do. And 2020 was, as you know, more than 700 days ago now. It's probably like 730 days ago now, and it just won't seem to stop. The same issues are being raised, the same concerted effort to try to discredit results from Philadelphia in advance of a single vote even being cast or counted, and the same challenges with the unique issue that Pennsylvania has that the secretary just spoke to about how long it takes Pennsylvania to count all those mail-in ballots.
In 2020, it took, 4 or 5 days in order to get to those results. But during that time, it just got filled with all sorts of lies and conspiracies.
That window of time is, I think, an acute vulnerability for the stability of our democracy. It's a window that we've seen exploited in 2020, and I wouldn't be surprised to see that happen again, where doubt is cast on those election results. I remember early Wednesday morning hearing the now former president say, why are they still voting in Philadelphia? They need to stop voting. But the voting ended by 8 p.m. on election night. It just takes some time to count voters' votes, as we should do in the birthplace of our democracy.
Nick, you've been traveling the country covering elections and pre-election politics all over the country. We've been focusing a bit on Pennsylvania for all the obvious reasons. We heard from the Secretary of the Commonwealth, and she said, look, our system is secure, you know, that we have all sorts of safeguards to make sure that everyone's vote is counted. How do you understand the level of misinformation and disinformation and even mistrust of the system itself?
Well, there is a persistent and kind of expansive distrust in the American electoral system right now, and it dates back to the 2020 election, but it's kind of been almost accelerated since then. There's, you know, numerous leading figures now among the kind of right-wing base, from the CEO of MyPillow, Mike Lindell, who has been, you know, advocating that our election machines are corrupt, and they're clearly not. But that's become a common conspiracy theory. Others have focused on absentee ballots, which, you know, former President Trump first started to really claim that they were rife with fraud. Again, they're not. But there's been this mistrust about absentee ballots, and they've also been targeted by a lot of Republican and right-wing efforts in lawsuits to try and make it either harder to cast absentee ballots or disqualify some absentee ballots if they have a small mistake or something. And those efforts as well have eroded trust in the elections. And when you couple that with over 24 laws that were passed last year that restricted access to voting, all under the guise of needing to, quote unquote, secure our elections when they already were very secure, has just kind of further built up this erosion and mistrust of the American electoral process that, you know, is very prevalent as we head into the midterm elections.
But Nick, why do people believe the MyPillow guy and not Pennsylvania's Secretary of the Commonwealth?
There's a big mistrust of institutions that has really taken hold, I think, among both I guess I don't want to, fringes of the political parties, but especially among the right wing base. And it comes, I think, from embracing, you know, an outsider politician like President Trump and railing against institutions constantly, that almost being told by a government official or an election official that, you know, the elections are free and secure further erodes their trust, because they come at it with an inherent, you know, distrust of the system. So the person in charge of that system is therefore also distrustful.
Right.
But there's also, you know, these, it's false evidence, but they use court systems or they use affidavits to add a veneer of legitimacy to their claims about, you know, corrupt election machines or something like that. And using social media, using the right-wing echo chamber, and very popular podcasts like Steve Bannon's podcast, they're able to, you know, get this message in front of a lot of people. And the Secretary of the Commonwealth, you know, doesn't always have that microphone.
Well, let me go back to you, Al Schmidt, and thinking about the court system. I mean, you know, I don't want to go back to 2020, but it's hard to leave it behind. There were something like 60 lawsuits across the country challenging the results, saying that the election was stolen from former President Trump. I believe 59 of those were thrown out of court for various reasons or ruled, you know, invalid or wrong. So you've got a court system, you know, you've got the Secretary of the Commonwealth, you've got people like you, you know, who are a Philadelphia commissioner, and then you've got the MyPillow guy and Steve Bannon.
And while our institutions have certainly been weakened over time, and we see that time and time again, one institution that held fast in the 2020 election was the judiciary, and that avalanche of lawsuits, frivolous or not, clearly intended for propaganda purposes. So there would be headlines saying, you know, the campaign or some entity or other filed a case to stop something from happening that, let's say, wasn't even happening to begin with, and having all those thrown out. I mean, obviously, that media universe covers those lawsuits being filed. It doesn't cover when they're thrown out. And it's always leaving, especially when you've lost, like Trump did in 2020, and wasn't close in Pennsylvania. It was more than 80,000 votes. Those lawsuits and that other stuff just sort of like continues to put out hope for those people. It continues to put out hope for, you know, some decertification of the election results or some fantastical thing like that is never going to occur. But I think that's also the point of it.
Well, Nick, you have a piece in the New York Times. Lawyers who advanced Trump's election challenges returned for the midterms, talking about the lawyers that have been hired by a number of political campaigns to essentially do in 2022 what they did in 2020.
Well, yeah, we've seen, you know, more than three dozen lawyers and law firms who were a part of that more than 60 lawsuits in 2020 kind of reemerge. And some of them are simply on the payroll of the Republican National Committee or, you know, other organizations with deep ties to the Republican Party, or on candidates' payrolls themselves. And that could be, you know, kind of an indication of future lawsuits that could come in the post-election period. But at the same time, we've seen some of these lawyers already file lawsuits,
right,
you know, challenging current election rules. So, say, one lawyer who was a part of a lawsuit in Arizona trying to claim that Sharpies, you know, it was a conspiracy theory about Sharpies manipulating ballots or making them get rejected, and that was thrown out in the 2020 election. That lawyer is back again challenging absentee ballots and the vote-by-mail process and the early count in Arizona. So when you have all these people playing again, it sure looks like there could be a similar post 2020 litigation arena in the 2022 midterms.
I mean, it seems like there are no consequences for people lying and promoting disinformation. And let me just read an email from Frank, who says, please stop speaking in general terms. Say over and over again, it's the Republicans who are attacking and degrading American democracy. And I think from the things that I've read, Al Schmidt, is that largely speaking, that is true.
It is, and especially when you're seeking to combat them and you are nonpartisan and nonpolitical, like our organization is, you frequently
The Committee of 70.
You frequently find yourself at odds with members of that party, of the Republican Party, because that's where so much of this is coming from. So even if you're sort of focused on this issue of strengthening democracy at this critical time, in this critical juncture in our history, you still obviously have this coming from one direction. But I do want to add that at the Board of Elections for the past 10 years, we had public meetings. And meeting after meeting, sometimes you'd have far right, so let's say Trump people there, and sometimes you'd have people far, far fewer, less frequently, but from the sort of far left end of the spectrum, who frequently kind of parrot a lot of the same things. Much of that litigation that you just talked about that Trump filed was taken verbatim from Jill Stein's litigation in that previous election, where she was seeking to have the election results audited and set aside.
Let me just quickly reintroduce you both, and that's Al Schmidt. He's currently president, CEO of the Committee of 70. That's a government watchdog group here in Philadelphia. He's a former Philadelphia City Commissioner, the lone Republican on the three-member city election board. Nick Corasaniti is with us. He's national politics reporter for the New York Times. We are talking about our democracy and the right to vote. And again, you can join us. Email us at radiotimes@whyy.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, and you can always call that that phone number is 1-888-477-9499. Nick, your editorial board this morning had a piece, America Can Have Democracy or Political Violence, Not Both. And they go on to say, of the more than 440 extremist-related murders committed in the last decade, more than 75% were committed by right-wing extremists, white supremacists, anti-government extremists. And the FBI has talked about the threat, the domestic threat posed by some of these groups and organizations. How do you see it?
Well, I think, you know, one place that we're seeing this, and my colleagues did really good reporting on this, is the threats to members of Congress, you know, which really came into sharp and horrifying focus with the attack on Speaker Pelosi's husband.
Yeah.
You know, my colleagues looked at how many complaints had been forwarded to the Capitol Police and then also to the Department of Justice regarding threats against members of Congress. And it's up tenfold, which is just an enormous amount for representatives, you know, democratically elected, that should be at least in line with a lot of their constituents. And the violence and the rhetoric has, you know, really kind of shown there. And I think it was more than one third of those complaints to the Capitol Police, or, you know, worries about threats to personal safety, came from right wing groups or with ties to, you know, the right wing base. And you just see, I think, an anger that's fomenting there and spilling into this kind of violent rhetoric. And, you know, if it's reaching all the way to the halls of Congress, I think that kind of is one of the most indicative and kind of horrifying realizations of this violence that's, you know, creeping into our political system.
This editorial also referenced a study done by the University of California, Davis, saying MAGA Republicans are more likely to hold extreme and racist beliefs, to endorse political violence, to see violence as likely to occur, and to predict that they will be armed with circumstances in which case they consider political violence to be justified. How did this issue of violence take over the Republican Party, Al Schmidt?
Well, I mean, we're also talking about a universe of people, and you actually just used the verb armed in a different context. But that is also, you know, sort of so closely committed to the Second Amendment and firearms and all the rest of that. So if it were coming from a universe of people that did not in themselves have the actual potential to do great harm, regardless of what they were saying, it would probably be less of a concern. But I think time and again, we've seen that, you know, this rhetoric is dangerous and has consequences, and it causes people to not only act out by threatening election workers across the country, like myself and many others who had it, I'm sure, far worse than I did. But what we saw on January 6th and what we've seen, unfortunately, just the other day.
And to you, Nick Corsoniti, and I mentioned this to our Secretary of the Commonwealth here about the safety of election workers. As you look across the country, are election workers afraid to do their jobs?
Most of the election officials that I've talked to, both poll workers and county officials, are increasingly concerned just about the rhetoric they see and the threats that they're receiving, as I'm sure Al can speak to.
Yep.
And they're just increasing. And so there's an unease permeating a lot of local election officials about, you know, what could be coming. But at the same time, they're also, A, confident that these elections will be relatively smooth, without issues, and that they're more prepared this time. You know, they've been dealing, unfortunately, with all of these threats and with all of this misinformation for the better part of 2 years, and for some of them, you know, since the 2016 election.
And I just want to...
That has kind of... Sorry, go ahead, Al.
No, I just wanted to add to it that, you know, that rhetoric itself, like you're saying, it has a secondary motive and secondary consequence, and that is to drive down voter turnout, where it's important that our election workers and our voters be safe. And it's also important that they feel safe. And I'm concerned that whether it's people not wanting to work on election day or people being concerned about showing up to vote on election day, that it will have a kind of suppressive effect.
Well, I want to take a very short break and then we'll get back to our conversation. And actually, we'll play something that you told the January 6th committee back in June, Al Schmidt, about the threats that you and your family faced after the 2020 election. Well, we are talking about the 2022 midterm election, which, of course, is just a couple of days away. And again, our guests are Al Schmidt, President and CEO of the Committee of 70, Nick Corsoniti, national politics reporter for The New York Times, talking about the right to vote, folks. Email us at radiotimes@whyy.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. And you can always call. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. Amid the swirl of disinformation, threats to poll workers, close races, and heightened political rhetoric, election officials are bracing for Election Day, which, of course, is on Tuesday. And today in Radio Times, can our electoral system withstand the attacks and pressures from those who wish to undermine it? And I do want to play a clip from our guest, former Republican City Commissioner Al Schmidt. He oversaw the 2020 election here in Philadelphia with other commissioners and was attacked on Twitter by then President Trump for countering the false election claims. At the January 6th Select Committee hearing on June 13th, California Representative Zoe Lofgren asked Schmidt about what happened after Trump's tweet.
The threats prior to that tweet, and on some level it feels almost silly to talk about a tweet, but we can really see the impact that they have, because prior to that, the threats were pretty general in nature. Corrupt election officials in Philadelphia are going to get what's coming to them. You're what the Second Amendment is for. You're walking into the lion's den, all sorts of things like that. After the president tweeted at me by name, calling me out the way that he did, the threats became much more specific, much more graphic, and included not just me by name, but included members of my family by name, their ages, our address, pictures of our home, just every bit of detail that you could imagine. That was what changed with that tweet.
You know, Al, I was almost afraid to play that again because I don't want you to get any more threats, but are you still getting threats?
No, I haven't. Not since I left that former role. Obviously, I have no authority or responsibility for running elections anymore. So I'm sure that's why that moved on. After the 2020 election, they did continue, though. Whenever the chatter would return about audits in Pennsylvania and all sorts of other things like that, those threats would come back.
But isn't it illegal to threaten someone? I mean, and to threaten their family, their children?
It is, and that's been, I think, a really unfortunate thing that we've seen in the last 2 years is a lack of people being held accountable for their interest and efforts to intimidate and to coerce election workers across the country. Fortunately, you've seen a lot of accountability for what occurred on January 6th. and deservedly so. I would like to see from Department of Justice Task Force and some others a commensurate amount of responsibility and accountability when it comes to efforts to intimidate election board workers by threatening them with violence.
Well, you know, when I'm thinking, Nick Corsanidi, about a number of other people who testified before the committee, a woman named Shay Moss, who was a poll worker and had her life turned upside down, had her grandmother threatened because she was just doing her job. How do we protect people like that?
Well, I think, you know, the example of Shay Moss just shows how deep and expansive this movement to kind of intimidate some of our election workers and threaten them is. You know, their entire life was turned upside down, as we saw in the January 6th committee. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, kind of what a lot of election officials are looking for is some more resources to kind of help protect our election officials. American elections have constantly been underfunded. They rely on, you know, either low-paid daily workers, volunteers, and it's the cornerstone of our democracy. So I think with more resources, you could provide some of that more protection. But this also speaks to just a broader issue, I think, of the disinformation network in general and how difficult it is for either social media companies or other entities to try and rein it in when it really doesn't have a center nexus. You can't stop one thing and prevent it all from happening. It's kind of spread like weeds.
Well, we have a very decentralized system, too. And I wonder whether that makes it harder to protect the people who work in that system.
Yeah, the decentralized American voting system, I think, can be both a strength and a weakness. And right. I'm sure Al has further thoughts on that. But
sure. It,
you know, helps prevent, I think, a really centralized attack. And so anytime there is an issue, it's very isolated. Even if the disinformation network and the bad actors try and take those isolated incidents and claim they're widespread when they never are. But to your point, at that exact same point, it's a very widespread, decentralized, and kind of grassroots movement to target these election officials and to target our elections. And stopping, say, InfoWars from having a podcast just means that another one's going to pop up. Or, you know, Steve Bannon's going to find another audience or another platform to spread his falsehoods and lies about the electoral process. So it's something that I don't think has a good solution at the moment.
Does it, Al Schmidt? I mean, is there a solution?
No, and I just want to add to it, in addition to how decentralized the elections are, the fact that we have the system that we do have where each state is running elections independently of other states does help protect these systems from being compromised, although it also makes it, I think, a little bit more confusing for voters. So we're in Philadelphia. Directly across the river is New Jersey. They run their elections totally differently. Just down the street is Delaware. They also run their elections differently. So voters in the same media market and everything else are being bombarded with information all the time that is inaccurate to their state, but still something that I think helps actually result in a lot of confusion when it comes to elections and a little uncertainty about when is the deadline to register to vote or when do I have to get in my mail-in ballot application or whatever else.
I mean, which raises the question, if we had a more nationalized system, would it function better or would it raise a whole host of other questions?
Yeah, and that does, as Nick said, come at a price. Like our decentralized system definitely hardens it against efforts to compromise election results, and not just state to state, but in Pennsylvania, it's county to county. We have 67 counties with 67 elections going on all on the same day at the same time, but completely independent of one another. And by the way, none of them connected to the internet.
Well, which is important to know. Well, talking about Pennsylvania, and you actually, and the acting secretary of the Commonwealth had an op-ed saying the state should change the way we count these mail-in ballots.
Yeah, there are, you know, one frustrating thing about this election, and the secretary spoke to it a little bit as well, is we know that there is a problem coming just a few days from now, five days from now, that we saw in 2020, and nothing has been done to fix it. And unlike most big problems, this has an easy fix, and that is to allow our state, like many other states, including red states, to begin processing those mail-in ballot envelopes earlier. And it seems like a mundane kind of thing, but it's really important to minimize the amount of time between the polls closing and the last vote being counted.
Because that's where the shenanigans can start, right?
The shenanigans being efforts to undermine confidence in the results. Right. Yes.
And Nick, so is how much is Pennsylvania an outlier when it comes to that?
They're actually not as much of an outlier when it comes to the key battleground states that determine presidential elections and are going to have pretty important roles in who controls at least the Senate. Wisconsin has the exact same policy as Pennsylvania, that absentee ballots cannot even begin to be processed until election day, leading to a big backlog, and that's why you get the delayed results. Michigan came to a bipartisan compromise to give election officials a 48-hour head start. But that's not even close to enough time, given how many absentee ballots are coming into Michigan as well. And I talked to someone from the Secretary of State's office yesterday, and they're not expecting results until until Wednesday night because of that backlog. And they're given, you know, that 2-day jump. So for whatever reason, Republicans right now are unwilling to give these local election officials and statewide election offices extra time to process ballots. And all that is just making this laborious process a little bit easier. And that creates that time of unknown and uncertainty and also mirages towards, you know, who's leading in an election. And that is always weaponized by whoever is in the lead. You know, we saw President Trump do that. And I think there are already candidates, especially on the Republican side, who are alluding to, you know, we expect to be leading on election night, and they leave it there, which motivates and furthers the distrust of their base.
Yeah. And go ahead, Al. I know you want to say something.
No, I just wanted to add, and meanwhile, Florida, and it pains me to say this, because Florida was, as you know, for the longest time, the poster child of how not to run elections in America. Florida actually does it pretty well right now, and they allow pre-canvassing of ballots so that around midnight or so, Florida will report all the mail-in ballots received other than, you know, ones that came in on election day. But the great bulk of them will be reported by midnight.
Nick, just picking up something you said, can we say that when we're talking about mail-in ballots, they tend to be Democratic voters?
Yeah, ever since former President Trump really demonized the process of voting by mail, Republicans have run away from it almost, you know, exclusively, and including in states where mail used to be the Republican advantage. In Florida, that I was just mentioning, that's how Republicans won state elections. And in Georgia, back in 2005, it was Republicans who put mail voting in place to kind of help their rural voters vote more easily who tended to vote Republican. That has completely flipped since the 2020 election. And in nearly every state, Democrats are much more likely to vote by mail. And that leads to this kind of, in 2020, we called it the red mirage. I think this year, just as it looks like Republicans are going to be doing better, it'll be more of like a pink hue on election night. But still, in a lot of states that have this backlog, you will see Republicans appearing to do better because they voted either early in person or on election day, which are able to be counted quicker than the mail ballots due to these tabulating laws.
I mean, it does feel like deja vu all over again. Here's an email from Jane. This is a culmination of decades of exploitation by the Republican Party. No offense to Mr. Schmidt, going back to Reagan to get the very far right-wing support through the issues of abortion and guns. The goal here is to have conservative state legislators change the law so they can decide election results rather than the votes of the people. She goes on to say, I fear greatly for our democracy. Al?
And there's a case before the United States Supreme Court called the Independent State Legislature Doctrine, which is one of these efforts on the part of some to try to make it so that the legislature can, under certain circumstances, determine who the electoral votes go to from a certain state. So I'm hopeful that they took that up so that they will clarify all this well in advance of the next presidential election, so that issue won't be an issue anymore. Equally important is the Electoral Count Reform Act, which looks like it'll pass in a lame duck session, that will remove any ambiguity about, for example, whether the vice president is required to or not required to certify election results from the different states, as all that sort of business related to the former vice president, this idea that the vice president could simply not count results from a state or close the window on that.
Let me read a couple of more comments. Chris says, it needs to be pointed out that these politicians or candidates who are election deniers are posturing. They are pretending to believe that Biden didn't win for their own political advantage. A comment from one of our listeners, I wish people would stop saying these election deniers are un-American. Their deplorable behavior is now American with so many people following this ideology. Nick, let me go to you. And this is actually a poll from just a couple of weeks ago, New York Times Siena College poll, which asked voters their views on democracy. And I wonder what your major takeaway from this poll is.
Well, our major takeaway was somewhat surprising. You know, a vast majority of Americans do think that our democracy is at risk. It was over 70%. Yet, very few viewed democracy as the most important issue in the midterms. It was in the low single digits, well below issues relating to the economy and inflation. So what we found was a kind of uneasy electorate about our democracy, and that included both Republicans, Democrats, and Independents. But none of them viewing it with such a sense of urgency or crisis that it needed to be, you know, top of the list in terms of things that they wanted to see addressed. They were still motivated more so by economic struggles and inflation and, you know, the kind of traditional kitchen table issues that drive elections and all of these threats to democracy and the unsettled way in which a lot of Americans feel about the electoral process kind of, you know, receded to the bottom of the list.
Well, and even quoting from your article, a majority of voters in both parties identify the opposing party as a, quote, major threat to democracy. That's fairly worrisome.
Yeah. What we saw was voters really, you know, we talk about threats to democracy in the kind of fundamental sense and what is looking at the democratic institutions. But when we asked different partisans what they viewed, it was very different. Republicans said the mainstream media or Joe Biden. Democrats were much more likely to say things like the Electoral College, former President Trump, and election deniers. But you saw, you know, a kind of real partisan lens through how voters thought about what the actual threats to democracy are rather than looking at our democratic institutions.
We have about a minute, and I want to end on this note, Al, because we began on this note with the Secretary of the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, which is our system is secure and it works. And I just want to make sure that people go away with that confidence that when they vote or if they have voted, that their vote will count.
It is. And our elections in Pennsylvania have never been more safe and secure with whether you vote on the voting machine on election day or whether you vote by mail. At the end of the day, there's a ballot that you cast that the voter verifies before it's cast, that it's used not only to tabulate the results, but in not one but two audits after every single election. And Philadelphia was one of the pioneers in adding this additional level of auditing some years ago when I was in office.
Well, we have to leave it there. My thanks to both of you for joining us today on Radio Times. Al Schmidt, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
You're welcome. President and CEO of the Committee of 70, that's a government watchdog group based here in Philadelphia, but covers the whole state. Nick Corasaniti is national politics reporter for the New York Times. Nick, thanks for joining us on Radio Times as well.
Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. And we began with Lee Chapman. She's acting Secretary of the Commonwealth for Pennsylvania. To replay this hour, many more hours of Radio Times, go to WHYY.org and look for Radio Times under programs. You can also download a podcast of the show wherever you get your podcasts. Diana Martinez, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Debbie Builder and Paige Murray Bessler. I'm Marty Bonds-Cohen. Thanks for joining us.